I live in Israel. This season is dedicated to the memory of the 1,400 of my countrymen who were massacred on October 7th and the 240 people that were kidnapped and are being held hostage by the terrorist organization Hamas. Hopefully they will be returned to their families as soon as possible, and hopefully this terrible war will be able to come to a peaceful end very soon. Welcome to Minute 97 of Season 6 of Move Around Minute, the daily podcast where we take a cap-rask journey through the 1946 classic, It's a Wonderful Life, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Curtis Blaze from Lots of Movies by Minute shows. Welcome back to the show again, Curtis.
It's a wonderful podcast. I'm so glad to be here again.
Yes. I'm glad to have you back. So Minute 97 begins with George continuing to cry a little bit while he's praying and ends with Welsh complaining about his wife's work. So we ended things yesterday with George, drinking at martinis, listening to Snow White sing in the background. And, then he starts praying a little bit. He starts saying, "Oh God, oh God." And then today he continues with that. And he goes, "Dear Father in heaven, I'm not a praying man, but if you're up there and you can hear me, show me the way. I'm at the end of my rope. I show me the way, oh God." It's a nice little prayer. I like the way that it's composed by the idea. He's saying he's not someone who normally does this, but just, he's not asking for a miracle. He's just asking for to be shown the right direction of what he needs to do. But I like the fact that he uses the phrase "at the end of my rope."
I was going to mention that too.
Do you know the definition of that phrase?
No, but I think you're about to tell me.
Yes, I am. So it generally means having no strength or patience, but it can also be to be out of options or alternative courses of action, to be stuck in a bad situation. And sometimes you have the idea that you throw a rope to somebody who's in a difficult place, if they're in a deep water or the edge of a cliff, but if there isn't enough rope, the person will be in trouble. So the phrase, of "at the end of your rope" means that you have no hope available. The situation is just not good at all. So I like how he uses that phrase because it really fits in here. He's done all he can. We know that he looked for the money. He got upset at Uncle Billy about it. He tried calling Sam Wainwright, but he's out of the country. He went to Potter. He realized when he was home earlier that he's just not treating his family well enough because he's so distraught over this whole thing. So you could really say he's got nothing else to do but to go and drink, which is what he does.
Which is what he does. This is I learned that this was kind of a famous scene amongst movies. At about the time that Jimmy Stewart pushes his he starts off the prayer with his hands folded in prayer, right? But then at a point where he pushes his he gets desperate. He's in a lot of pain. He's pushing his cheeks in. He's pushing his fist into his cheeks instead of praying. And at that point in this movie, Jimmy Stewart starts actually crying. And that wasn't an act or something. That was him, the actor, being overwhelmed with emotion at the gravity of what's happening right now in George Bailey's life. And he actually does start crying for real. It wasn't scripted. And Frank Capra love that so much. I don't know if you've been paying attention to the camera moves, but what he's done is he has a static camera, showing Jimmy Stewart with his hands folded on the bar praying, sort of a medium shot, you would say. And then at that point, the camera starts to do a push, right? Until we come up to a close up of Jimmy's face. And the reason that was done is so that Frank could really capture the tears coming down this guy's face as he says all this. And that wasn't a planned movie either. If you look at the dailies, that was just a static shot that didn't do anything. He actually, post-filming, did a push mechanically with the film itself. So as the shot pushes into Jimmy, it gets more and more grainy because they're showing less of the actual, you know, 35 or 75, 70 millimeters, whatever it was, in order to get that dramatic close-up.
Wow. Yeah, that's really cool. Well, we know that Capra was a great director, so there's just further proof that he knew what to pen in for.
Well, I guess the thing that kind of about that is what it tells me is that this guy didn't do a lot of coverage. He was just sticking a camera there and you do your performance, then he sticks the camera somewhere else and you do your performance. So he didn't have the kind of coverage to he didn't also do a close up and he didn't also do something else. Like he had to make that happen in post.
I think I've heard of numerous scenes in this movie where he did that.
Yeah.
Unless it's mostly this scene that people talk about.
This is the one I knew about.
Right. Interesting. But I mean, he definitely does a great job here. There's no question about that. And I mean, again, you know, Jimmy Stewart shows how great of an actor he can be with just the way, as you said, he's able to make himself cry here. You know?
Yeah. To be overwhelmed with, because when you think about like a setting for a movie, you've got, I don't know if she was actually singing in the background or if it was a post ad or if they just had like a record playing, but for him to take all the hot lights and all the stuff that's going on and just get into the scene that hardcore to where he's actually feeling what George is feeling. Well, you know, Jimmy Stewart, I mean, he's one of the greats for a reason.
Right. That's true. So at this point, you know, we get a shot of the bartender, Nick the bartender, and he says to him, "Are you all right, George? Want somebody to take you home?" So there are a few things I want to say about that, just that phrase. The first of all, it's very kind, you know, that at this point, you know, you're having a bartender who's offering in this small town to find someone to drive you home. You know, he's like, "Okay, George," he didn't say, "Are you drunk?" He says, "Are you all right?"
Right.
You know, he doesn't say, "Okay, George, you've had too much to drink. I think someone's going to take you home." He's like, "You look very sad. So maybe you should go home. Maybe someone should take you home."
Well, and you know what would happen? Nick would pull Martini over, probably. And probably either Martini himself or Nick would be the one that takes him home.
Probably.
So much.
Probably. I mean, we'll get a little more into Martini a little bit tomorrow.
Okay.
It comes up. We'll talk a little bit more about what Martini thinks of George.
Sure.
You know, that whole thing. But do you know who the actor is who plays Nick?
No, I don't.
Okay. So
I
mean, his name is Sheldon Leonard. Okay. He was born in 1907, passed away in 1997 at the age of 89. He has 109 IMDb credits as an actor and 19 as a producer.
Oh my God.
I found some really, really interesting things about him. First of all, are you familiar with the TV show The Big Bang Theory?
Yes.
Okay, so what are the two main characters' names?
Oh, I've never actually watched the show. I just know that it exists.
Oh, okay. Okay, so the two main characters are named Sheldon and Leonard.
Okay.
And they are named after him.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
How come? I mean, this guy, I guess he's famous and I've never heard
of him. He was a famous producer. He was more of a famous producer than he was of an actor. As an actor, he's the guy who gave Bill Cosby the job in I Spy.
Okay, he produced I Spy. Yeah. So
he produced I Spy.
Like if you look at the IMDb, what's his four things he's most known for? What are besides this movie?
All right, there, he's known for four things. He's known for It's a Wonderful Life. He's known for To Have and Have Not. He plays Lieutenant Coyle. Another
Capra film. Okay, go on.
Okay. He's in Guys and Dolls. He played Harry the Horse. And his fourth thing, which is actually his first, if you're looking at the way that it's listed on IMDb, I left this for the end, was him as the producer of The Danny Thomas Show, where he produced 289 episodes.
Dang. Wow.
So he's had a short career as a producer. He produced Gomer Pyle 150 episodes. He produced The Andy Griffith Show, 249 episodes. I Spy, 82 episodes. The Dick Van Dyke Show, 158 episodes.
This guy is responsible for the after school rerun viewing of my entire generation.
Exactly.
Wow.
That's right.
Crazy. The thing I always think about this guy is from the minute later on after, you know, after it happens and he's mean to George. I always flash that. Hey, look, everybody, I'm giving angels their wings while he's like,
that's singing. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So here's another anecdote about him. He was, this is hilarious. In 1992, he was inducted into the Television Hall of Fame because he had already received 5 Emmys for his work. Right. In 1995, he received a lifetime membership into the Directors Guild of America. And as he was accepting it, he joked and says, giving a lifetime membership to a guy 88 years old, big f-ing deal.
Super colorful.
So, yes. I think that's very, it says so much about this. I mean, I've learned so much about this guy that, as you said, I've only thought of him as the guy saying, hey, look, I'm making wings. You know, I'm giving angels wings.
That's so cool. I love that.
Yeah.
Wow. I just had no idea. We were watching greatness happening on screen more than just that performance.
That's right. At this point, George continues to cry. And then Martini comes over and says, why you drink so much, my friend? Please go home, Mr. Bailey. This is Christmas Eve. It's funny because
Martini, a.k.a. William Dafoe. William Dafoe. I'm kidding. He's just always reminded me of him.
Okay, I can now see that. I that's a very good point. But you know, it's funny that Martini thinks that he's crying because he's drunk. He's drunk. You know, and this is probably George's first or maybe second drink. You know, I don't think he's been there very long at this point.
Ooh, I disagree. I think Jimmy is playing.
You think he's been there for hours now?
Well, I don't know if he's been there for hours, but he is slurring his words and is definitely acting drunk to my perception.
Interesting. Okay. No, because I'm basing it on the fact that Nick said to him, are you all right? You know, right. Nick doesn't say to him, okay, I'm not giving you any more drinks.
Oh, I interpreted that as he's just being nice. He's not accusing him of being drunk. I think that might be a strategy that bartenders use.
It could be. I mean, we also don't see like a whole bunch of glasses in front of George.
That's true. We don't.
You know, stating that, okay, George has been drinking here for a few hours or whatever it is. Actually, you know what? When George stands up, you can see that there are two. Hey, I got it right. There are two glasses in front of him.
Right. But then in the next minute, he is drunk driving. He's weaving all over the place and he crashes into a.
Well, not everyone, you know, not everyone holds their liquor well.
Yeah. Okay. So it could be.
Yeah, that's a possibility too. And right after Martini says to him that he should go home and he calls him Mr. Bailey. So the guy sitting on the stool next to him goes, Bailey? Which Bailey? And then Nick introduces George and goes, this is Mr. George Bailey. And then this guy just gets up and, you know, he stands up and just like throws a punch at him.
Right? That's one of those things in those old movies. People are just wild and free with their punches.
That's right.
There's never any standing around calling each other a p- for 10 minutes that goes on first. It's always just leading right. with the punch.
That's right. Exactly. So the character Mr. Welch is played by an actor named Stanley Andrews, who was born in 1891, passed away in 1969. He has 386 IMDb credits.
Oh my God.
There are tons of people. This is not the first person in the movie that we've come across that has hundreds. I think we even came across someone who had like 400.
I guess, you know, with the studio system, the way it was back then, it would just be, you would just go to work as an actor.
That's right.
And you know, just today you would be in this movie and tomorrow you would be in this TV show.
That is correct. Now, my first question is why does Mr. Welch need to be introduced to George? I mean, Bedford Falls is a really, it's supposed to be a small town. So you'd think that most people are familiar with everyone else.
Sure. Well, when you say, why does he need to be introduced to him, what do you mean? Do you mean, why do we as watchers need to be introduced? Or
no. Do they say, why does Welch not know that this is George Bailey?
Oh, he's probably just in his own world. You know, I don't know how you do it, but when I go to the bar, I'm not paying attention to anyone around me. My
Okay, but do you live in a small town that everyone knows you?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Oh okay, all right. So I don't.
Oh yeah. I'm the chairman of a lot of things in town. And
okay, exactly. So that's the thing. So but you know, compare it to Bedford Falls. We don't know how many people live in Bedford Falls, but Bedford Falls is not a metropolis. You know.
Right. Right. I think it's just nighttime. There's a lot of noise. This guy is just sitting alone at the bar, fuming over the fact that some a-hole just yelled at his wife and made her cry for an hour. And also it's that time frame, so he's probably like blaming her a little, like, that stupid bee just sitting here making me miserable by crying so much that I have to leave. And
exactly. He's not. Well, I mean, again, let's just get into his line and then we'll dissect that. So then, you know, okay. after he punches George, we hear a woman screams, and then he goes, the next time you talk to my wife like that, you'll get worse. He goes, she cried for an hour. It isn't enough. She slaves teaching your stupid kids how to read and write. And yep. I mean, here at this point, he gets cut off. So tomorrow we'll have to hear the rest of what he's saying. But he's not really, you know, you can interpret this in numerous ways. I think you hit the nail on the head with what you said before. You know, that he's saying to myself, oh, my God, I just had to comfort my wife for an hour because she was crying because of this guy. You know, I needed to get out of there and go home and go get a drink.
Women, am I right?
That's the way it sounds of what he's saying here.
Yeah,
you know, and he also gives him a warning that don't talk to my wife that way. But next time you'll get worse. You know, he's already punching him. What's worse? Right. Is he threatening to kill him?
Yeah, right. Like what?
I think the next time he jumps on top of him and starts kicking his ribs in, at least
maybe.
it's a pretty good punch as it was. He already mashed his teeth against his lips and got him bleeding.
That's right. Well, again, he has, you know, he's been in 300 and something movies, so he knows how to throw a punch.
Big old fist too on this guy, just great big old meaty hooks.
That's right.
A guy.
And so George is on the floor, and then Martini picks him up, and everyone goes to George's aid there. So I guess maybe everyone in the town knows George, but Mr. Welch.
Like I say, I think it's just the fact that it's a dark bar. This guy's just there staring at the back wall, drinking, fuming. And then he just by chance, this guy shows up next to him. And he's like, what?
Yeah.
And probably there's a few Baileys in town. I think, in fact, we know there are. There's a few Baileys in town. So he's like, oh, I'm surprised. And plus, George is kind of in his own world, too. His face is in shadows. And he's just sitting there crying. He's got his fists up to his face, and he's got his collar up and everything. This is all plausible to me that this guy wouldn't know immediately that he was sitting next to George. And plus, they're all kind of in their own world. And so then when he finds him, all that rage that he...
You're saying he got so pissed off at his wife that instead of getting violent with her, he decided that he was going to go out and get a drink.
Right, right. That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
So that when he comes home, he'll be even more drunk and more violent.
He'll be in a good mood because now he's been pardoned. Like he gets it out of the system. But then while he's still fuming, while he's still trying to drink away his violence, the actual guy, George Bailey himself, shows up. So out comes the fist.
Interesting. Okay.
That's my interpretation. Because, you know,
I don't know because, I mean, again, we never see this character ever again. We'll see him tomorrow and that's it.
Yeah. It's that kind of thing where women were just prisoners in 1945. There was no, they couldn't get divorced. They couldn't own land. They couldn't vote. Men were just to them. I don't know, whatever. But
don't really know.
it makes for the scene. You know, this is the talk I was having with my wife, and I was putting a note in it to ask you, and I'm glad I'm remembering now. What do you think drove George over the edge? Or is that a conversation we intend to have later?
Let's have that later.
Okay, that's fine.
Let's have that later this week because I think there's a more appropriate time to have that discussion.
Gotcha.
Okay. But that's a good question. So put a pin in it, and this way, you know, when people come back later this week, they'll be able to hear us talk about that.
Perfect.
That's actually all I have for this minute. Did you have anything else you wanted to discuss about this minute?
Well, how the camera's moving around, because watching it with a fine eye, this just amazes me. Like almost all of this, God, I say like so much. Almost all of this minute. First of all, an incredible number of shots for Frank Capra. Eight cuts. Ugh. And then it's almost all handheld. As much as, except for that original push, once we go to shot number two, where the camera starts off at a standing level, you know, at about 6 foot, and we're showing Martini, and then the camera pans down with Martini and pushes in slightly so that you visually get the sense of Martini making himself more intimate with George. All of these shots, they use handheld to convey emotion in the scene really, really well. Just things like that. Pushing in to make a two shot with George Martini, you know, are you all right, sir? And then, you know, doing a pullback to see the guy go for the punch. Oh, what, your name's what, Bailey? And then you get this more like less emotional shot where, you know, he's about to get popped. Just all that stuff, all the cinematic work in this. I'm just amazed. I'm really amazed by Frank Capra's work in this, which I'm probably going to say 10 more times before our week's over.
Okay, but that's fair. It's true. So there's nothing wrong with continuing to say something that's true.
What he does with nothing just continues to amaze.
That's why he's one of the masters.
Yeah.
All right, great. So every Monday we have a segment called Capra Monday, where my guests will give their top five Frank Capra films, you know, appropriate to our discussion that we're just having right now. So, Curtis, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
Well, I don't know how many people are in this spot that I'm in, but I've only seen three Frank Capra movies in my life.
You're in a better spot than some other people. I've had guests that only have seen one, and this was that movie. So you're good.
So my number five is one I intend to see as a result.
No, we don't count. I mean, you can say it, but it won't count because you haven't seen it. So. Okay.
Well, I'll just get it out of the way then. Because of doing this exercise, there's a movie that I want to see now called Meet John Doe that I didn't know existed.
Okay.
So that'll be my number five. And then my number four, I also haven't seen, but I've seen the play a couple of times and didn't know it was a Capra movie, Arsenic and Old Lace. That's my number four. So I'm probably going to watch that again and see how it compares to the play that I've seen a couple of times. Okay, so now the movies I've actually seen. My number three is You Can't Take It With You, which, you know, was an okay movie. It was just basically kind of a dumb comedy in my opinion, but it was kind of fun.
Best picture winner, but yeah.
Oh, okay. That's so mean to do it. And then the top two, of course, are two movies that I love. I mean, I've watched them a few times a piece. Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, which was actually my first Capra movie. I just didn't know it. When I was a teenager, I got in this thing where I'm going to watch really good movies or, you know, famous movies. And that was one of them. And I loved it. Love, love, love that movie. And then, of course, It's a Wonderful Life, which I've seen probably now 70 times.
70 times. Wow. That's a lot.
A lot. Let's just say a lot. More than 50
times. Okay. No, that's fair. That's fair. I'm all for watching movies and rewatching them. So that's fine. This is not, I don't think I've seen this movie 70 times, but I'm definitely not shallow in double digits. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. It's one of those movies like Star Wars where it just is, I need something on in the background, and that's what I'm going to have on, something familiar that I can follow without paying attention anymore, and I love it.
That is definitely fair. All right. Thank you very much for that list, Curtis. So, Curtis, why don't you tell everyone where they can find Curtis Blaze?
Okay, well, my last name is spelled like Blows, B-L-O-E-S, Curtis Blaze. You can find me at Linktree/Curtis Blaze, and it's got all my stuff there, all my photography stuff, all my podcasts, all everything.
While you're doing that, you go rate, review, and subscribe on any podcaster you might be using to listen to the show. Finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on my website, movieRobMinute.com. You can find me on Facebook, and you can find me on Twitter. So, until tomorrow, hot dog!
go.
I love you truly, truly dear. Life with its sorrow, life with its tears.